Everyone, welcome to yet another episode of Contact Lost, the Polish English-speaking podcast about Warhammer 40k, competitive Warhammer 40k, where we covered both the Polish scene and the international scene. And yet again, today we will be focusing on the international scene, just because it so happens we are going to be covering the LGT, the London Grand Tournament, right there on the spot, together with Wargames Live. We're going to be doing the between round sort of summaries, interviews, the end of day studio with the highlights of the day, and so on and so on. So make sure that you like, subscribe, and press the alert button so that you get all the notifications when we go live, because without it, you might miss it. As you can see on the screen, as you can could have seen on the banner or on the thumbnail, I have a very special guest today. I'm wearing a very special shirt today for that occasion as well. With me today, I have probably the sexiest beard in Warhammer 40k and a guy that I have a ton of respect for what he has done with Team Republic of South Africa for the WTC this year. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Kyle Grundy.
Hi, Tomek. It's lovely to be here and a pleasure to be on. I noticed that top straight away and I was like, yes, represent the South African boys. Yeah, That coverage that you did at WTC was amazing. And I think the South African boys absolutely loved being on Liam, being on your show. And I think the overall event was amazing as well. And it was such a pleasure and an honour to coach those lads. They definitely, in my opinion, knocked it out of the park. What do you reckon?
I think, well, this t-shirt is really the only one that I wanted at the event. Like this, really, this one, those colors were the only ones that I was going for, and I managed to get it on the very last day. So, you know, I was very happy. There were two teams that I was, well, three, including Poland, but two teams that I was rooting for very strongly this year. First one was South Africa, the second one was New Zealand. But Republic of South Africa absolutely, I think, outdid themselves. They actually put up a fight to the Polish team. So some of the things that the people from Republic of South Africa did surprise the Polish team. And when I listened to the Polish speaking podcast about the WTC, they do admit that they might have a little bit maybe underestimated South Africa. So yeah, great showing, great first time showing. I guess this is extremely important. And I hope that we will see them at the event going forward, not only next year, but the year after and after and after. And did I hear correctly that you might be involved with them a little bit as well next year?
Yes, I'm hoping to. I'm keeping my doors open, but I loved representing the underdogs, should we say. It's always been a Achilles heel of mine, and I think it's when you're a small dog in a big park full of big dogs, you know, you want to prove and put your stamp on the market. And I think they did it extremely well. We didn't have an easy pairings and really, really difficult pod. But the one thing I liked, and I know obviously we're not here to discuss WTC, but it's just a nice segue. It was just great having the encouragement from a well-established team like Poland. And they did say immediately, it wasn't one of those afterthoughts. It was like, as soon as we did our pairings, we thought we got this. And then the moment we started playing, they were like, oh, these guys can play. And then we had some really good positive encouragement from Poland. And it really, really meant the big difference. And having everyone rooting for them, honestly, really, really made them try even harder. And I think from a first time showing, I was really proud and I'd love to represent them again.
That's really cool. But yeah, I mean, we can come back to, and we can do a separate episode on the WTC, and I would actually like to invite some people from the team as well to give us their recap of the event. This one, however, is more to focus on, well, you, but also on the LGT.
Yep.
So to anyone who is listening for the first time, I'll just do it once and then we will continue. So we are doing this to somehow also mark that it's the seventh edition of the event. Or the seventh iteration of the event. That's why we decided to do the series of episodes called the LGT's Lucky Seven, representing the number of the editions. And all of those focus on some sort of like top seven of something. I usually take a list of topics that I invented or came up with, and I pitch them to our guests. Our guests can pick something from the list, or they can pick a topic of their own. And I guess in Kyle, in your case, it was a topic that you invented yourself that you really wanted to talk to, and I guess this ties in a little bit with your I don't know how to call it, coaching spirit or teacher spirit, because you play Tau, you coach. And today you want to talk about the top seven Tau strengths or strengths of Tau. And we are going to try and, as you've nicely put it, crack this egg a little bit and see, with benefit both to players who play Tau and play against Tau, how to go about them.
Absolutely.
Is that correct? Yeah.
That is correct. All right. Yeah.
So let's get down to this. Let's get down to Tau, first of all. Let's start with you and Tau. How did that relationship come together? How did it happen that you started playing Tau and nothing else, and that you stick to Tau no matter what?
So I'm definitely a creature of habit. I always have been. And once I like something, I get my teeth stuck into it. That's it. I don't derail myself with any distractions. So I was a fantasy player, mainly. That was where my first entrance to the Warhammer world was. And it was lizardmen, dinosaurs riding dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. What's cooler than that, right?
And
exactly, right? And I just walked into a Games Workshop on the wrong gaming night. Tuesdays was fantasies, Thursdays was 40K. And I just wanted a game of, you know, dinosaurs riding dinosaurs, eating elves or something. And 40K was going on. So I was watching. And so I was like, why don't you just join in the 40K? I was like, no, I can see you doing a lot of combat. I've got big dinosaurs for that. And then they were like, well, you just don't like combat. I was like, well, I do like combat. Just if I'm going to do a futuristic game, I want to shoot stuff with guns.
Obviously, as you do.
So a lovely Games Workshop employee was like, well, have you heard of Tau? And I was like, what the hell's a Tau? And then I saw the Farsight model in the battle suits, and I was like, God damn it, there goes my wallet. So that's where it all began. And I just fell in love with the lore. I fell in love with the models. And then it all just went, I suppose, downhill or uphill, depending on your perspective, from there. And suddenly I became, you know, one of the most hated people in 40K because nobody loves Tau. But I love Tau. And they're like, oh, God, it's Fishman or the Tau King, depending on...
Yeah. All the memes.
So, yeah. And I think from then, you know, just building on the army, going to different events. I only really started going to like events probably when I was like 18, just gone to uni. And then from there, I'm now a 36-year-old man, still playing Toy Soldiers, still playing Tau. I do have a confession. I might look like a small angry dwarf, and I do have a small angry dwarf, but it's still in the boxes, the Votan since release. So I've not quite pulled around to, you know, building them yet. And I've heard they're pretty good now, right?
Yeah, but it's still an army that sort of, at least at the very beginning, worked like a gun line. So I see a pattern there.
Yeah. It was like Gunline, Small Angry Dwarf. I've been told I look like Gimli. So, cool. Let's do this army.
Yeah, it's like middle of the road for both.
Middle of the road, yeah.
Passions. Yeah. Awesome. All right. So you've played Tau. You've developed as a Tau player. You've become the faction specialist. Mm. This led you to actually become a trainer, right? Or a coach.
Yeah.
So the first I heard of you, and I think the last time Joker interviewed you before the last LGT, you were still wearing the Vanguard Tactics t-shirt.
Yeah.
And now you've progressed and you offer your own coaching services. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that before we move on to the nitty-gritty of the episode?
Yeah, sure. I mean, like I said, I'm a creature of habit, and once I really enjoy something, I'm passionate about something, I just can't put it down. So I think I'm, you know, without tooting my own horn, I think I'm well known within the scene for being the Tau guy. And obviously I've always been approachable. I did it in my professions. It was always about like coaching, developing people, managerial roles, and then helping people find their career paths and various things like that in my professional life. So it kind of seemed like a kind of habit or a behavior pattern that's within me. So I joined Vanguard Tactics, I think about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And that opened my eyes to an entirely new world. And obviously Warhammer was at that kind of weird spot where there was some coaching and some services, but it wasn't quite as big as it is now. Mm-hmm. So I always had this idea of setting up my own like Tau Academy, if you will, really following down the lore, you know, going from Chassois all the way to Chassos. And I just wanted to kind of create a space where I could, you know, build a community of my own, specifically for Tau lovers. I'm going to say like a safe space for Tau players, you know, You know, the world is brutal.
The world is brutal. Yeah, yeah. People will bully you for choosing an army that you love. But Warhammer's inclusive, everybody. Don't get the wrong idea. But apparently Tau players seem to get a little bit of the beat stick every now and again.
So your program, the Pure Tide program, is like this utopic universe for all the Tau players.
Yeah, pretty much. Just come and join us. No? Okay, here's the butt of my rifle. Yeah, I decided to set it. I left my job in March and decided to give this, you know, a good old shot. And it's going really well. We've got a Discord community that's just roughly around about 1,000 members now, and it's growing continuously. And I think the more I obviously, one, market myself, two, show people that it's a mixture of, there is a free community, it's not all behind a paywall, but obviously some of it is, because it is a business at the end of the day. But I really do specialize on kind of helping people get the best out of their army. But Tau is one of those ones where you can't just pick up and play. And you do need to learn a lot of the core mechanics. You do need to learn how to position properly, deployment. You make one bad mistake,
forget some mechanics as well, right?
Yeah, and your game plan kind of goes away. Uh-huh. So I wanted to kind of offer my services from my experience over the last, what, I've been playing Sid Tau since I was 14. I'm 36, so 22 years. And also, I've been playing competitive since I was 18. So I do have quite a vast knowledge that I want to pass on. And there are some really good, like, success stories of people that are relatively new that have actually kind of skipped the long learning curve and kind of fast-tracked and done some really amazing things in the scene. So that's what I'm about. And if you want to come and check me out, there will be details in the link and stuff below. But yeah, I'd love to have you on board and join the greater good.
So let's, yeah, without further ado, let's give people a taste of what you offer. So let's listen to what you have prepared, and then maybe we'll see how people can tackle the top seven strengths of Tau. So yeah. I don't know, do you have them like in an ascending order or anything, or do you want to just go with?
Let's just go with the order that I've written down. Okay. Yeah. In no particular importance, but I think actually the first one I've chosen is probably the key crucial part to why Tau can be very successful. So the first strength that I want to kind of focus on is their speed. Now, 40K has always been, there's lots of tricks, there's lots of, you know, things that you can do within games, but the one key denominator that will help you win games is speed. Movement is king. So Tau have quite a lot of it, and it comes in the form of crisis suits at the moment and a Cold Star Commander. For those of you that don't know what it does, a Cold Star Commander gives the unit advance and still shoot because it gives them the assault keyword. But more importantly, it adds +2 to movement, and it allows them to advance 8 inches. Now, the crisis suits have auto advance 6, and the Cold Star gives +2 to the movement. So basically, their movement 12, and they can advance 18 inches in total. And that in itself can catch you, one, off guard, if you've not positioned correctly, and two, they can bring a hell of a lot of guns to your face in a single activation. So it's something that you need to prepare for. So how would you prepare for it? Okay, so the way I look at this is, if somebody's faster than you, you need to trade your resources effectively. And the way that you can do that is by simply move blocking the area of which the crisis suits want to get to in order to draw a line of sight or be within range of your key assets. So, Tommy, you play Death Guard, right? Apparently they're one of the fastest armies in the game, right?
The other extreme, I would say.
The complete alone. So, like, in terms of your unit choices, what if you were to pick something to use as a trading resource, like a move blocking tool, what would you instinctively go to?
So in my list, I always try to bring a couple of units that are like both action monkeys and units that can either take the board pretty quickly that, you know, the normal standard Death Guard units cannot. So I would think, and my list for the LGT Invitational has 3 units of Nurglings, which are there to do just that. So they are there to sort of block movement, to block out the table so that people cannot deep strike. If I know that there is an opponent who can deep strike, for example, then they are supposed to push the deep strike away. They infiltrate, so you can put them anywhere on the table. You can deep strike them as well to do the missions. So they pretty much tick all the boxes that are there for that. In my list currently, I used to have a drone that, you know, for Death Guard moves 10 inches. So for that army, it is fairly quick. So again, it can be used both to apply some threat and to push away, or block potential places where armies like Tau could appear and out of nowhere and, you know, just shoot me to the face. So yeah, that's probably what I would be going for. Maybe Mythic Blight Haulers, that they are cheaper now. They pretty much serve a similar purpose that the drones do. And with the, I would say, downgrade to the fly keyword in this edition, Blight Haulers and drones move and act very much the same. Just one is more anti-tank, one is more anti-infantry, let's say. So
absolutely. I think any of one of the ones you mentioned, like the Nurglings. So with the, and you've also mentioned the fly keyword getting nerfed, no longer can we just be like, oh, my crisis suits are infantry, let's zoom, zoom, zoom straight through the wall. We have to kind of go up, over, down diagonally, or go around. So when you look at one of the typical pieces of LGT, like the mid Ls, crisis suits probably will want to go around the sides rather than going up, because if you go up, you're losing probably around about 7 or 8 inches going up. And then obviously you've got the diagonal line, so it leaves you with 11 inches. So if you position those Nurglings to the one side and then you go, well, your crisis suits can't move past this area, you still have to be aware of that they can fly over you. So as long as your back of your base is covering the area where they could land, then, and with being outside of an inch of you, you can take off probably between, I don't know, 3 to 4 inches, which is massive. Mm-hmm. Because Tau, and I'll get on to in terms of the next point, which is like weight of shots, most of their weight of shots is mid-range. So it's like 18-inch range. So you can really play around with the pre-measuring stuff. So to kind of give you nice, easy, digestible bullet points, one, move blocking is going to be extremely important. Two, if you have any way of stopping units advancing, I'm looking at you, Eldar players, and your bloody Night Spinners, please get in the bin. I hate them. But the reason I hate them...
Tyranids and Barbagans, right?
So, yeah, exactly. Like that. So you can't, with a Night Spinner, it's a -2 movement, you can't advance. Okay, so that ability that I just mentioned about Cold Stars and Crisis Suits. Okay, now I'm back to movement 10 and I can't advance. I am going nowhere.
You know, there are armies that have those tools in the box, so to say. Like yesterday we were playing a test game with Joker, so my usual co-host. He was playing Thousand Sons, and apparently Thousand Sons have a spell that simply halves your movement, but also halves your advances and charges. So now he, you know, I deep struck my Death Shroud, and they couldn't go anywhere. They were just like, they were moving 2 inches. So you know, I couldn't get, like, I planned the game for charging something that was 7 inches away, and then he goes, well, yeah, but you know, I halved your charge range, so you cannot really get to me. And I was like, I hate you. I hate you even more.
I was literally going to ask you, like, how did that make you feel? But yeah, it's like when you have this tool and you're like, all right, I'm really confident in this pick. This is its job. This is what I need it to do. This is how it's going to plan out in my head, and you're pre-planning. And then someone goes, oh, nice toy. It'd be a real shame if I just took it away from you. They're going, oh. And the reason I wanted to focus on that particular point as well is because when you look at your own armies, you know exactly what their strengths are, and then you know exactly what their weaknesses are. So you're trying to cover up your weaknesses or really just bank into your strength. And if somebody is able to mess with your key component, it can throw you off your game.
Yeah.
So if someone took away the Tau speed, you're like, oh my God, my whole battle plan, I'm going to have to think on my feet now, or have I thought of a backup? And so generally as 40K players, you need to have some sort of plan B, if you will. You need to have some sort of, well, if somebody takes that away, what is the new game plan? So move blocking, messing with their advancing or movement is going to be really key to take away that power. Also, if you are a fast army in equal measure, then it's kind of seeing who blinks first. But sometimes with Tau,
And I'll give you an example. When I was at the Northeast Open, a gentleman came over to me. He knew me and I didn't know him. And he said, "Hey, you're that Tao guy." I was like, "Yes, I am." He was like, "Can I ask you a really weird question?" I was like, "Yeah, sure." He was like, "I'm going against Tao and I've never played him before. Are you open to giving me advice?" I was like, "Sure, sure, absolutely. Are you playing Custodes?" And I just went, "Okay, well, Tao can pick you apart if you spread. If you go on two ends of the battlefield, they'll just focus on one side, collapse that flank, and then come back to the other flank later on." And he was like, "All right, interesting." I said, "So if you're going to push, push everything at once. Don't be going piecemeal. Here's one unit. I think it can survive." Oh, it's dead.
Give your opponent edible chunks, right? Just
Threat overload. When your go turn happens, is just push everything. Mm-hmm. And he was like, "Oh, interesting." I said, "You need to do it early." He's like, "Why?" I said, "Because Tao gets stronger, the game goes on because they get more shots." And he was like, "Oh, that sounds horrendous." I was like, "Trust me, until you experience it, you'll think it's horrendous, and then you'll come up with a new word for it later." And he did just that. He came over to me afterwards. He's like, "Thanks so much for the advice. It actually really worked." And I was like, "Now I feel bad because I've just literally..."
You actually done wrong the other Tao guy. So
the Tao guy, yeah. But it's an... I looked at it in, you know, as a coach, I kind of tried to look at the positive. I was like, "Well, at least that Tao player will learn a lesson in his head." And I was like, "You're trying to put a positive spin on it," even though I literally just shafted him.
Well, the glass is always half full, right?
Yeah, exactly right. So, yeah, threat overload. So if you've got lots of important, like, durable pieces, or you've got stratagems that you can split between different units to keep them a bit more, alive, just push. But push on one side. Just dominate that one flank or the center and just go, "Here's so many units that you have to actually deal with. Pick and choose. You can't kill it all." Because Tao have activation issues sometimes, because their whole rule, the greater good, as convoluted as it is, it's basically one dude sees you, the other dude shoots better, but only so many units can do that. And also, if they choose to split fire, they get a -1 ballistic skill if they're not shooting the target that's been spotted. Mm-hmm. So you can play with that a little bit. So like I said, move block. Mess with their movement, you know, threat overload. Those are the kind of things that you need to be looking at when going against Tao.
So one of the topics that I was pitching to people as well, but somehow nobody decided to pick this one up, was there are multiple units in this game. And since I play Death Guard, I can speak so about Mortarion, for example. There are multiple units in the game that people still believe have certain strengths or certain weaknesses, but it's not the case because the edition has changed. And like in the previous edition, Mortarion was a beatstick. He was, you know, easy to target, easy to gun down, but once he got into combat, you knew he could deal damage. This edition, not so much. 5 attacks or something like this, plus some minor attacks. If you fight against something that has an invulnerable save, absolutely forget that you're going to do any damage. For me, Tao is similar. Like, I think of Tao, and I think of Tao at their prime in 9th, when they had, like, all the indirect shots in the world, and the crisis suits with their drones, absolutely indestructible, absolutely dominant with the volume of shooting, 2-up save, and so on and so on. It's a myth, right? It's no longer that. The unit has changed. The data sheet has been modified.
It has been modified, so they lost all the drone stuffs. Like, drones are now on the shelves unless the tournament organizer goes, "Bring your drones, or at least tokens, you lazy bugger," and you're like, "Oh, fine." So the crisis suits now, as a baseline, 4 wounds. The reason they have 6 is because you can take up to 2 drones, and shield drones add an extra wound. So you will 9 times out of 10 see 6-man crisis, 2 shield drones each, and a commander in there with a shield drone marker drone. So gives them the mark like keyword, ignoring cover, but the rest of it is just extra belated wounds. Mm-hmm. So crisis suits hate damage 3s because 2 of those go through, bam, dead crisis suit. But don't worry about that, because crisis suits can kill themselves, and I'll get onto why later.
I wanted to focus mainly on the indirect. It is an option, but it's not like, I guess, the go-to, or you bring it for different purposes.
Yeah, so indirect is just straight in the trash, patow. I have a thing in my head. I'm thinking little Jimmy the intern was given one job. The guy who was in control went, right, see this towel indirect? This is where we want indirect to be. This is, you know, we want it to still be in the game, but we don't want it to be impactful. Just a little bit of small damage here, but nothing too big, okay? And he's gone, yes. And then the guy came back. Let's call him John. John comes back after 2 weeks of annual leave and finds the guard codex, the guard index, and Eldar. It's like, Jimmy, what have you done? Jimmy, what is this? And then the indirect from Eldar and D-cannons and guard, manticores, a whole lot. It's just oppressive. But Tau, their airburst went from strength 4, ignoring cover, AP 1, to strength 3, blast, 0 AP, not ignoring cover. And SMSs went from, well, you had 8 shots per broadside, so it was like 4 shots on SMS at strength 5, ignoring cover, no AP, to then strength 3, twin linked, 3 shots. It's like,
yeah,
nice. And that's
Timmy,
it.
What have you done?
I was like, that's it. There's no way of improving them. So the airburst is a tech piece, and I'm not going to get credit. The guy called Danny, a Polish player, took a single airburst on a crisis team. And the reason he did that is very clever in terms of, if I can't shoot something, then I can't fire and fade. For a strike and fade is 2CP for Tau. So if I have a single airburst at 24-inch range, I can at least fire a gun that's not doing any damage, but is allowing me to then activate my stratagem to move again, or 12 inches move. So I think that's a very clever tech piece, and I think most people are going to be using that. I, for one, I'm a little bit on the fence because very rarely am I not shooting something, but I can definitely see the benefit of that. But indirect Tau, don't worry about it. And on that note, when Tau first came out with the airburst, and I think it was Alex Harrison who ran a filthy list, which was basically 6 broadsides, 10 crisis suits, all the SMS, all the airburst fragmentation launchers, all the plasmas, long strike characters for days. And basically, that's the point where I switched off on Tau, because in my head, I was like, well, if the opponent goes first and hides, they die. If they go out in the open, they die. If I go first, I kill them off the board and can clear 1,200 points in one turn. If I go second, I can clear 1,800 points, and then I don't even have to play the game. No, thank you.
Yeah.
That's why Tau is hated, because the writing of the GW rules and stuff have just kind of gone, did you not see that's a problem? And then they learn from it, but then they didn't learn from it. They learned from the Tau indirect, but then gave it all to Eldar and Guard.
They learn within an edition, but not from edition to edition. So it's
Yeah.
Anyway, we have 6 more points to go. So we've covered the mobility. What's next?
Weight of shots. So volume of shots, should I say. Wow. So cyclics were always good. And just don't bother asking your Tau player what guns he have. He'll just say cyclics on all of this.
Yeah.
And cyclics are 3 shots, 18-inch range, strength 7, AP 1, damage 1. Overcharged, strength 8, AP 2, 2 damage, hazardous. Each crisis suit can take 3 guns and a support or battle suit system. So you will find that a crisis suit will have 3 cyclic guns, which is 9 in total, and a 4-up invuln. And the units come in 3 or 6. So if you have a 3-man, it's a casual 27 shots. If it's a 6-man, just a casual 54. On a unit that moves 18 inches and goes, huzzah, please get off my board. So
yeah,
I would love to ask you the question of what's a durable unit in Death Guard, but if we just stop that a second and go straight to Necrons, Necron's Lich Guard, Bob, that Crypto Thralls was like, nigh unkillable. Tau go, sorry, what? Hold my beer. And just done. Removed.
Please remove that.
Yeah. Just, I don't like that. Can you remove it? So weight of volume is huge. Mm-hmm. And you might think, well, what can I do against that? So there's a couple of things. from my games and my experience with playing the Cyclics is, yes, they are very good. They will delete anything that they want to in a single activation, apart from a pre-existing, was it Wraith Knight with -1 to wound? No, that was not going anywhere. But AP2 is the problem. So I was finding that if they had any abilities to reduce the AP, cover, you could say, but no, Tau have all these little marker lights that just go, no cover for you. Mm-hmm. So Armor of Contempt is really good because AP1, that becomes AP0 if I don't overcharge. AP2 becomes AP1. Still probably not going to survive the amount of shots coming your way, but it can definitely make the Tau player think about how many guns he has to overcharge. Because I mentioned that the overcharge one has hazardous. So a 6-man unit will have 6 crisis suits and a cold star. The cold star, by the way, has 4 guns. And guess which guns you put on him? Cyclics.
Yeah.
So that's 66 shots, which is 11 hazardous rolls. 22 hazardous rolls in total. So, yeah. Statistically, they're losing a crisis suit and a half.
Per activation.
CP reroll. Yeah. But a crisis suit and a half just for shooting their guns. So that weight of volume has a timeline. And that timeline is how many crisis suits are going to be dead before turn 3, because then when turn 3 hits, or turn 2 in some cases, in most cases, should I say, and I'll explain why, they get sustained hits 1 from turn 3 onwards army-wide. And if that dude looks at you and spots you and then the other dude shoots better, sustain hits 2.
You're in for a lot of pain.
What? Like, okay, 66 shots sounded pretty horrendous already.
Mm-hmm.
But when you put in sustain hits 2, oh God, the maths just go insane.
Off the chart.
Yeah, just, shall I remove my unit now, yeah? I want to go and get a beer, or I want to just actually not feel like my soul's been taken away from me, die by die. There is an enhancement. The Kion, exemplar of the Kion, which goes on a cold star, and that cold star goes in a 6-man crisis, and they're doing that sustain hits 1/2 from turn 2. So yeah, fun times for Tau, sad times for anybody else. So how do you deal with that? So similar to the mood blocking stuff, if you can tag a crisis, and by tag I mean charge it and then pin it in place, then they're only doing that damage to that unit.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got any fast moving unit that can have infantry is the key word that you need, and kind of get into position, because Tau are not going to want to reveal. They want to kind of jump out of a piece of terrain, shoot you, fire and fade back, or alternatively, on the go turn, when they push you, they'll come out, they'll shoot, they'll fire and fade forward. So you need to kind of stop that and be prepared for that turn 2. So any ways of, like, I don't know, you said you infiltrate Nurglings. Now, how many points is a Nurgling base? Like 30?
You pay 35 points for 3 bases.
Right. So you need to check, obviously, the rulings of the tournament that you're going to, because the UKT specifically says that Overwatch cannot be used after a unit's completed its charge move. So if we were against each other in the invitations, it might just happen, and I hope this you don't use this on me, but you're probably going to, so let me just go for it anyway.
That's the whole reason why I'm doing this.
Yeah, there we are. So you thought, sod it, I cannot contend with the amount of shots he's going to throw at me, so you know what I'm going to do? Nurgling base, 9 inches away from your deployment line. I'm going in to charge to keep those crisis suits there. Then the Nurglings charge in. I'm not in a position where I'm out in the open, so I can't overwatch you. You tag me, and then I have a whole turn of having to shoot the Nurglings. If I fall back, I can't shoot, so that all of those 66 shots are not going anywhere. So that's the way you can do it. If you've got lots of infiltrating units or lots of units that can actually just go in and charge and just, you know, tag that unit and slow, A, fixes problem number 1, the speed, because it slows them down, and 2, shuts down the weight of fire, or says to the Tau player, your weight of fire is going here. If you want to tag me with something a little bit more durable, then looking for an opportunity to maybe charge me the Land Raider, that could be interesting. Because again, it's a tough body. I'm going to be winning on vibes. And obviously, with it being a 2-up armor save, it's pretty resilient. So those are the kind of things that you need to be looking at, weight and volume. And also, there's a tactic that a lot of players do to shut down activations in from an opponent's shooting phase. And that could be only revealing one or two models out of a ruin to put on an objective. Now, that would work against armies that have got low weight to fire. But with Tau, they can obviously just go, right, bam, shoot you. Mm-hmm. But their range is limited, so that 18 inches. So if you've done point number one, i.e. move blocking correctly, you could actually afford to put out some models out of a piece of terrain on an objective, but keep the rest of the unit hidden in case there's some small other small arms fire coming at you from elsewhere. You can just remove those three if needed, and then your unit's still safe. So things to shut down the weight of volume, you can do it that way, because Tau sometimes do want to split fire with other small units. But against the weight of fire of the crisis, probably not going to work, but you'd have to focus on move blocking and stopping them getting into position. Stratagems, I'd love to say to you, oh, if you've got this feel no pain stratagem, or if you've got this minus one damage, it's going to help you. But in reality, it's not, because 66 shots with sustained hits two, hitting on threes with full rerolls, because they get full rerolls from these tetras, tiny infiltrating piranha things that are just 80 points of just, well, thank you very much, I'll have full rerolls to hit.
8 points of craziness. Yep.
Yeah, yeah, eight points of craziness. So 66 shots, 12 of them hitting on twos with full rerolls with a commander. So if he's hitting on twos, you're going to reroll everything that's not a six. So he's going to get between 15 and 16 hits. And then you've got the unit of 54 shots, which is probably going to come out with about 85 to 90 shots. And then you're like, bro, can you just not? And you don't always have to overcharge against all the targets. You could just keep giving them loads of dice to roll and hope that they'll roll loads of ones and twos. So yeah, you need to focus on positioning. Is the only way around that is positioning and stopping them from getting into range as best you can.
So for someone who, like myself, although I did study the maps for the LGT, but for someone who hasn't, are the LGT tables Tau friendly in general? And by Tau friendly, I mean not dense, or can your opponents actually use the terrain to their advantage and somehow outmaneuver you?
You can, yes. They are very deceptively tight on angles on the UKT. I think they've done a lot of work and improved the quality of life for both combat armies and shooting armies, and I like that. Same can be said about the WTC loadouts. But what I would say to, let's say, our combat brothers out there, is that you've got a couple of key staging points, especially on maps that are like the diagonal deployments, the what we search and destroy, I think it's now called. Mm-hmm. You've got a couple of these small rectangles. Now, all of the pieces of terrain are obscuring now because there's none of this 5 inches tall, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So you've got these boxes that you can comfortably fit a unit in and just wait. And when I talked about tagging and charging, you can have one hell of a reach from that center point. From that center point, you can pretty much hit both the objectives, the home field, and the one that they're trying to, say, fortify. Mm-hmm. So you, by putting a combat pressure in these little nooks and crannies, will really help you and put pressure on the Tau, but you need to make sure that you keep your units tucked in. If you've got some guy in a really good pose and he's got his arm out going like, yeah, fist to the sky, make sure he's tucked in. If you've got a guy with a blade sticking out, make sure it's tucked in, because Tau will, a Tau player, a good general, will look for any opportunity whatsoever to get a line of sight. Because if they can't get line of sight on something, they ain't shooting, which obviously sounds obvious, but you need to be super strict with yourself. Take a couple of extra seconds, minutes, whatever it may, and make sure your unit is hidden. And make sure you also declare your intent to your opponents as well. I see that going wrong so many times in games. Just say, hey, man, I'm trying to keep this unit out of line of sight from the crisis suits. What can they move again? Where can you go? And you know what? If somebody asks me for help, I'm a spare set of hands when I'm playing my opponent. So, you know, just if you're trying to do something, tell me at the point of trying to do it. Don't say afterwards. So anyway, that was a slight segue, but it's really good etiquette to follow at the tabletop. But for me, just make sure that you're being clear. Keep your units tucked in and hidden, and you can actually put a lot of pressure on a lot of the maps. Some of them, no. Some of them is very Tau friendly. Big big areas of nothingness in the corner where you can just, scrap reserve some broadsides or deep strike some crisis suits, and then you're in a world of pain. But at least, I'd say, out of the five that most people are going to be playing, I'd say at least three of them are very, very dense, and you can get around. Two of them are a little bit too open for my liking.
Mm-hmm. All right, okay. I mean, yeah, I saw that yesterday when playing the game. We were playing, I think, the round two table with those diagonal deployments. There were just like four areas on the table where there was nothing.
And
I was glad I was not playing against Tau, although, you know, Thousand Suns pack a punch in the shooting phase as well. Had I been playing against Chaos Space Marines, probably I would be in a world of pain as well. But to anyone who is listening, wherever you go to a tournament, make sure that you check the terrain pack, you check the tournament pack, and you read what the terrain is going to be like, because you might want to just tweak and adjust your list a little bit to that terrain, whatever it is. Right, let's move on to the next point.
So one of the most powerful rules in 10th edition, Lone Operator. So what Lone Operator is, it's like you have a model or models or an ability, and you just can't target that unit or model unless you're within 12.
Mm-hmm.
So outside of Tau, you're seeing obviously the stratagems. I know Death Nurgle have it, where they can just go, this is Lone Op, choose another target. You got infiltrators with the librarian, can't target within 12. Tau, so they have characters, Unvar and Shadowsun, Lone Operator. They have Ghost Keels. Now, Ghost Keels have been sat on the shelf for ages, looking at the Riptides going, I just want to be you. Now the Riptides are looking at their little brother going, I just want to be you now.
Your time to shine now.
Yeah, I know, it's their time to shine. So it's 160 points. It's a T8 vehicle, and it's got two stealth drones, and what they are is just blanks. So the damage, you hit, you wound, and then whatever damage it is, I just go, no, thank you. It's zero. It's important to note, if there is some confusion and maybe the player is playing it wrong, you do not get to roll your saves, because the allocated step is after to hit, to wound, allocate, and then obviously save. So when it's allocated to the Ghost Keel, they choose to blank it before the saves. Speaking of saves, the Ghost Keel's got 2+ save. It doesn't have access to smoke if it takes the battle suit support system to fall back, which is usually the pick, because one, fall back is really important because you can still shoot, therefore still do actions. So if anybody's playing it so that they get smoke until they fall back, no, it's not. It's you don't have access to that. You have this battle suit support system. So that's how I've been playing it. But yeah, the Ghost Keel, 12 wounds, T8, 2+, lone up. 160 points.
Why not?
That's the issue. It was 170, but then the balance date said they went, I just have 10 points back. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So you're going to see either 1, 2, 3, depending on the lists. So they're going to be a problem because they're not easy to shift, and they're going to be a distraction Carnifex. So how do you deal with a distraction Carnifex? Well, its damage is a little bit anemic. So it's only got 6 shots if it takes the Iron Raker. Strength 8, if it overcharges, AP 2, 3 damage, or strength 7, AP 1, 2 damage. And a fusion blaster that's twin linked to strength 9.
Mm-hmm.
It's not massively killing anything. It could do a bit of chip damage, but it's not there to do damage. It's there to do mission play, screening, and just generally trying to bait you out.
Yeah, to play mind games with your opponent, basically.
So don't fall for the bait.
Yeah, don't go into a trap.
Just let the Ghost Keel do its thing and focus on killing their mission play, which I'll come on to with MSU. Focus on the things that are winning the game. The Ghost Keel is there to go, look at me, look, don't look at me, you can't see me, but look at me, and then that's it, jazz hands. It's going around doing jazz hands.
You can see me. No, you can see me.
So Ghost Keel, don't. But the problem is, if you're a combat army and you're going to be deep striking, you're going to have to deal with it, because it's going to go wherever your deep strikes want to be. It's going to go there and go, yo, either sayonara, commander, it's been a good life, or it's going to survive and go, sucks to be you. and then it's going to jump away, and then the crisis is going to come in and be like, thanks, ghosty, and then they're going to ghost you. So
yep.
Go for it if you have to, but with charges, don't bother wasting your shots on it. Unless you are, I don't know, Marines with full rerolls to hit and wound while you still can. and you just basically go, oh, the moment, get wrecked. That was the only thing that comfortably, like, just deleted the ghost kill. Like, Hellblaster's going, oh, hi. Bam, 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 bam. Goodbye. Yeah. But outside of that, not much can, you know, take it down in one activation. You have to, the good thing about the ghost kill for the Tau player is that in order to kill it, I'm not saying it's unkillable because it is killable, but in order to kill it, you will have to maybe put two, maybe three resources into it. And then the Tau come in and go, you see those three resources? Goodbye.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And then they're winning the trading game, the resource management game. So don't waste your shooting resources to kill a ghost kill. Charging ones, yes, because you want to get up the field anyway. Shooting, no.
Mm-hmm. I remember... well, vaguely, but I remember that the Polish national team who took Tau to the WTC, they, I think they had like a character called Aunva in there. Is that also a lone op?
Yeah, and he's arguably more survivable than a ghost kill. First off, he's a hologram. He shouldn't exist. You know, you should turn it off. Don't even shoot him. Just go by the back, turn it off, and then watch the whole Tau and go, oh my God, he's dead?
Oh my God, unplugged Uncle Aunva.
yeah, no! And then Shadowstone's like, I knew all along. So, Aunva, and I'm going to save the best to the last here. He's got a 4-pin bun. He's blown up, minus one to hit, minus one to wound. Once per game, 2+ invuln for that phase. Not turn, phase.
Insert okay. Jackie Chan meme.
Yeah. This is like, okay, cool. What? And is 2 wounds and honor guards. So he's got 2 honor guards. That's 4 wounds, and he's got 5. He's got the worst combat weapon in the game, as you would expect for a hologram, but we're not really using it for combat here. And mm-hmm. he's the supreme ethereal, right? He's meant to lead his army. He's the most revered, honored ethereal. His ability is just have +1 to your battle shock test. Now, I insult it, but with the new Tyranids that come out, that's actually not bad. But 65 points for a model that just goes, I'm blown up, I'm minus one to hit, minus one to wound, 2 up in one. I actually had a test game against one of my Tau students, and I shot an entire crisis team, 6-man crisis team, on a course. So remember, the guys at 66 shots plus sustain hits 2. Kill him. He was left on like 2 wounds. I was like, wow. Okay. Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
This guy can just scream. He can be annoying. He's lone up and he just doesn't die.
Yeah. Sounds like a pain in the back, to be honest.
Yeah. Hit with him, though. You know what is the way around it is? Get up close, use the grenade strat. Use the grenade strat and go, here's 3 mortal wounds. If you spike and do more, good on you.
But yeah, I wanted
grenade strat, mortal wounds. Ways
I wanted to say, I have Typhus in my list. And okay. Typhus is known for, you know, the ability to take down lone ops just by looking at them.
Mm.
Unfortunately, it hardly ever works in my case. And yesterday was just another confirmation, because on his amazing ability that can do either D6 mortal wounds or D3 plus 3 D6, guess what I've rolled? Once again, I went with a 1. So out of 3 games that I played, 5 times that I used it, 4 times was a 1.
I mean, that's statistically what happens, right? I've got this one ability that's really, really good. Oh, it's like me taking a hammerhead the other week. I was like, oh yeah, okay, cool. 1 into 1, brilliant, fantastic.
Why did I even bring it? Yeah,
why? 130 points of just disappointment.
So I suffered that yesterday. So hopefully at the event, you know, we will have our contactless dice finally with our logo. So I'm sure that they will add like plus 10 to my rolling skills. But for now,
if I hear you cry or scream from the other side of the hall, I'll know that you just rolled the one again.
All right, listen, time is passing. I don't want to keep you here forever. What's your next point on the list?
So powerful characters. And when I say powerful characters, is that all the Tau characters have kind of historically, and obviously in this index as well, been buff manders or giving out various abilities that makes their units better. So obviously I've already mentioned one, the Cold Star. There's no point in telling the other ones because I think that you're just going to see Cold Stars for that extra movement and the ability to have the assault keyword. And then you've got, we've already talked about Umbar, a really powerful lone op that's kind of indestructible hologram. And then you got Shadow Sun and Farsight. So the two heroes of the Empire, different philosophies of war, they're going to be iconic. And they're cheap. They're 100 points. Shadow Sun is blown up again. Reroll one auras for all Tau units and abilities to kind of give a CP back on a 5+ if a stratagem is spent on her or any unit within 6 inches. She's got some decent shooting, some fusions that can deal with the anti-tank kind of stuff. T10, sweet spot, T9, fusions at strength 10. So powerful characters. You're going to see potentially some lists having single commanders on their own because, again, it's another way of being able to spot for stuff and a commander's reliable ballistic skill of 3. You might see some single enforcer commanders. Their ability when they're leading a unit is minor incoming APs are reduced by 1. Okay, it's cute, but I find the lethality of the games just spikes now. So, you know, there's not many AP 1s. Mm-hmm. Yes, AP 3 is still going to put you on your inbun anyway, so meh. But where was that? Enforcer commanders, 7 wounds when you give them a shield drone, mark a drone, they have a 2-up save. So you might find these single characters at 100 points just mm-hmm. dropping in and going, hey, guess what guns I've got? I got 4 cyclics. And I'm a 2-up save with cover, 1-up. So, yeah. And I'm there going, come and deal with me. And I'm 100 points. So you're definitely going to have to spend more to remove me than 100 points. Therefore, I'm winning the attrition.
Yeah.
So be aware of those. So how do you deal with these powerful characters? Okay, if you take away the lone op, and if you have any ability to have, I think it's precision, mm-hmm. to allocate damage to those characters, or you get a character in there and you go, I'm going to slap the gauntlet of challenge to you and then absolutely decimate them, then that's perfect. The Cold Stars will favor more guns, because if you look at it on a stat from a stat point of view, the Cold Star commander can take 4 guns, a Crash Suit can take 3. So most people will be taking 4 guns because they can. Whether that's the right choice or not, it all depends on how you play your Tau. Some people will be going invulnerable save plus 3 guns because the sustain hits and everything makes up for the lack of the 4th gun. So having an invuln is going to help them. But if they don't have invulns and you've got ways of like picking off that character with high AP, high damage, looking at like a Vindicar Assassin, for example. A Vindicar Assassin can just one-shot a Cold Star. Hmm. So, if I mean, I say it as if it's easy. It's not. It requires, you know, you not to roll a 1 into a 1. but you can kill a character with some sniper rifles, with some...
Or spells, know, or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, if you can... go for it, because if you remove the Cold Star from the unit, the Crash Suit has gone from 18-inch movement to movement 10. You've just reduced almost half their speed.
Yeah.
So precision is going to be key to getting rid of those powerful characters. Unfortunately, the other ones are lone op, so unless you've got any abilities like Doombolt with T-Suns or ways to target characters, even though they're lone op, you ain't going to be doing anything on your terms. They're only going to reveal their characters on their terms. And that's something that you just have to accept and just move on with your life and focus on what you can deal with rather than focusing on how to deal with something you can't. So the powerful characters, precision is my only advice. Getting a really beefy character in and challenging their character, or just hitting them hard and killing them, that's going to help you later on.
So I need to ask this question because, again... what I asked about earlier, that certain units have this notoriety from the 9th edition. And again, to me, I have nightmares thinking about Tau characters in combat, because in 9th edition, it felt like they were the complete opposite of what you would think about Tau. So I remember in 9th edition, when I came, essentially when I came back to playing after like a year of hiatus, I went into Space Wolves. And Space Wolves were just an ordinary faction. Like, they didn't have anything special. I loved the theme. You know, the myth around them was that they are good in combat. But when I came to fight like a Farsight commander, for example, or someone similar to that, it turned out that not only can't I do anything to him, but he fights back and he hits like a truck. So is that still the case for Tau commanders or Tau characters, that even though it's a shooty army, they are still powerhouses in combat?
No, it's our tools got taken away from us. The thermoneutronic flamer combat enforcer was amazing. You know, you basically had the three combat bros in 9th. You had the Cold Star Onager Gauntlet. Here's a massive fist. I'm going to hit you with it and I'm going to kill you. You had the thermo flamer, which is a special flamer that was strength 4, AP 2, 2 damage, reroll all hits and wounds, precision. Mm-hmm. So he was in combat as well. And then you had Farsight. So those variants are now gone, so you don't have to worry, but there is something to be said about Commander Farsight. He's the dude, the big red man himself, with a blade, a demon blade, and it's still good, just like everything in 40k in 10th edition, combat seems a little bit anemic. It's like, just shoot stuff, it's better, bro. And you're like, all right, okay, but I really like hitting people, you know. Well, good luck on that one. On your way. Farsight has, for a start, all crisis suits are vehicles. So he's a vehicle, so he has access to tank shock. Awesome. So he can go in with his jetpack, burn you a bit, and then hit you with this giant sword. He's got 4 attacks. He's got 2 profiles, sweep and strike, whatever it's called. The 4 attacks, if you go full strength, is strength 10, AP 2, flat 3 damage. I think it's 82. Yeah. And then the sweep attacks are like strength 6.
Nothing just got fat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's 8 attacks. But he has an ability. He grants +1 to wound when leading a unit within 9 inches. And that works mainly shooting, but also it works in combat. So he gets +1 to wound for himself. So he'll be wounding most things on 2s, if not 3s, if you're higher than, you know, T10. But yeah, so he has full rerolls to hit and wound with +1 to wound. So all going to hit, most of the time all going to wound, and then he just does flat 3 damage, bam, bam, bam. And the tank shock with the mortal wounds on the charge, because obviously one of his profiles is strength 10, he's going to be stronger than you, so he's going to be rolling more dice to proc those 5 up mortals. So not bad, but to be honest with you, it's a tool that the Tau players are going to want to put in the toolbox, because sometimes you just need to look at a unit in front of you and go, I don't need to shoot this unit. I can just charge it and kill it. So therefore, I can apply my guns elsewhere and then get that or operate in another phase. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where Farsight comes in. But you don't have to be worried about more than one combat element. It's just Farsight with his tank shock Farsight with his blade and or tank shock alone from other stuff. But that's it. Most of the other vehicles are not high strength, so you don't have to worry about it.
Okay. Happy that we've done away with another myth, let's say.
Yeah.
All right, we have 3 more points to go. So what's next?
It's the many small units. So MSU is how it's usually referred to. Or the technical term, basically what many small units is trying to kind of tell you is that it's all about the trading resources. So what Tau have done in the past is it's mainly just like, here's loads of big Riptides, Drone City, done. Then we had addition of just Kroot Hounds popping up everywhere and loads of small little units just to harass and screen and move block and various things like that. Now, Tau have that now even more than ever because we've got the treatment of, I don't know, here's 15% reduction in your overall points, about 15-20%. Which is huge. My list gained 210 points, give or take, which is massive. So you're going to have loads of small single piranhas, 4 Kroot Hounds, single Kroot Tox Riders, maybe stealth suit units, You're going to have loads of little chaff pieces that are going to want to play the mission for Tau. Mm-hmm. Whilst also having ridiculous amounts of crisis suits, broadsides, you name it. So they're going to have at least 3 to 4 hammer units and then loads of like MSU to play the mission. Two ways of dealing with this. Number one, ignore the crisis suits, kill their MSU.
Mm-hmm.
Easier said than done, because obviously if you've got indirect, decent indirect, you can deal with those like small units. I know Eldar players will be drooling at the lips if they see some Kroot Hounds on the board, because they'll just night spinner them, and then the Yunkarn will pop up and go, hello, it'd be like the Kool-Aid guy, like, oh yeah, yeah. And just bash through the wall.
I won't be able to remove that depiction from my head.
That's what the Yunkarn does every time I see it. And that, in order to lift my spirit when I go against like Eldar, and you know, I'm like, I just see the Yunkarn as the Kool-Aid guy, and I just giggle. But basically, delete their mission play. Because that's going to put pressure on their big units. They don't really want to be doing, you know, actions, if you will. So if you've got any ways of clearing them, do it as early as you can. Easier said than done, like I said, because these small units can hide quite effectively. Piranhas have scout move of 9, so they're pretty quick. And the piranhas have an ability which allows them to turn, well, make you take a battle shot test when within 12. So yeah, just take away those little pieces, because for me, what I'm worried about is that because I'm trying to tone down my list in, I want to get a fine balance between my most efficient shooting units and my damage dealers and my mission play. And it's often a very tough struggle for most of the players I'm talking about, especially going into LGT. We've got list paralysis and trying to kind of like work out the perfect balance. So I'm always worried that if somebody took away my trading pieces, then, if I'm doing tactical, I'm in a bit of a predicament now. If I'm doing fixed, again, you're making me use units that I don't want to. And that's why Tau are going to try and bank on doing lone ops so that they don't lose their training pieces. But there's not many lone op training pieces outside of Unvar. There's still quite a point sink of 160 points of ghost kill. But single piranhas, Kroot Hounds, Krootoxes, and Vespid, you need to clear those, because that will put some sort of level of control back in your hands. And then you can be like, okay, well, I'm not touching the crisis suit, so I'm not dealing the damage to these damage dealing units. But if I put pressure on the other stuff, then I'm going to still be able to stick to my point plan or my game plan.
Yeah, something like mission point denial.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, focusing on that, but making sure that you understand as well from a trading resource, Tau will do this better than you. Played correctly by the Tau player. You need to look for, I suppose, mistakes. And for those Tau players listening in, don't make mistakes, especially if you're in my program. I will be watching. No pressure. No, you just got to look at, right, why am I using this piece? What is this piece doing for me? What is it achieving? Okay. Do I need to screen against an incoming deep strike? Yes. Okay. The Tau player will send out a fast piranha. Cool. Now, what do you do? Do you shoot this piranha? So this is from the enemy's side. Do you shoot the piranha, or do you use it as a way of charging it to then kill it to then maybe go on an objective as well? So, you know, if a player's positioning their screening one next to an objective, that's your opportunity to leapfrog it. I know it's a little bit harder to do in this edition, but it still can be easily pulled off. You can then kill it, piling, consolidate, whatever it is, on the objective, done. So that's for Tau players done one thing, screen. You've done kill and get into a position to kind of sacrifice that unit, but you've got a bit of extra movement and your primary denial as well. So you've done kill a unit, you've gotten an extra movement, and you've denied their primary. So your one trading piece has done 3 things, where the Tau player has done 1 thing, which is green. So you've got to think of it like that. You've got to think, why am I pushing something out to die? What is it serving for me? And is there any way I could go back, and we go back to my point number one, speed, move blocking. Could I also potentially move block as well?
Mm-hmm.
So it's using that unit to go, right, how many things can I get you to do before you die?
And yeah, it sounds like with that specific playstyle that Tau has, it applies even more to Tau than to any other army, that nothing in the list really appears there by coincidence.
Correct.
Like everything is there with a purpose, and it might sound obvious, but there are excuse me, many players who, when build their list, you know, they build it in such a way that there is an amount of points left, and they just maybe I'll take this or maybe I'll take that to just fill in the gap that was left. With Tau, it sounds like you build the army on purpose, so to say, where every unit is brought on purpose with a certain.
I think that's genuinely something that I would advise to all, you know, competitive or just general 40k players. To be honest, you look at your army of choice and you're like, cool, I like this unit, I want this unit. This is really efficient. This is the damage. This is I can do most damage with this unit, etc., etc., etc. And we all love it. You take your favorite toys, but then. The more and more you play the game, and I suppose the more you advance within the competitive scene, top players are actually doing it in reverse. They go, okay, well, I have a golden rule for myself, which usually I'll put in about like 20%. Sometimes I might dip to no less than 15% of my list that is there for utility, that's there with a particular goal in mind, screening or playing with their mission, primary denial, that kind of stuff. So I kind of try and set my list out into like, sections, percentages, and be like, what mission play do I have? Do I have any elements of primary denial? What are my damage dealing units? So I'm not just thinking take all guns. Yes, my invitational list is take all guns with a bit of utility, but that's because it's a bit of fun, right? I'm just going,
it's a different kind of tournament.
Different, I think. But like, genuinely, I look at list building in that way rather than how many guns can I bring to the gun show. I look at, well, actually, the people that I might end up playing, or it doesn't have to be a well-known person. I find that with the LGT, you were going to have so many wild cards, people coming in from overseas, people that are not known on the scene that may have just spent a month in their basement with a mate and just suddenly cracked the code of 40K. So you've got to always be prepared to have a couple of tools in your toolbox to deal with somebody's jank, if you will, or somebody's gameplay. So I do find that list building, you need to kind of focus on different elements of the game. You know, like we talked about a few, move blocking, you know, various things like that. And you need to be thinking like that way, especially for a competitive environment.
All right. Moving on. Two left. So let's go with the next one.
Board presence. It kind of ties into MSU, but more in detail, infiltration units. So infiltration is key in this game because especially on some of these UKTC maps, you've got options to put, let's say, five infiltrators behind a wall and on an objective or slightly off the objective. So in case someone gets storm hostile objective, you know, you can position them safely and then move into position. So having that roll off, which is arguably one of the worst roles in the game in history, because it's like, oh, attacker, defender, it's all mirrored terrain anyway. Is it really important? Oh, I don't care. You place a unit first. I'm not bothered. It's generally right what happens. It's
essentially, there's just that.
The only thing that changes is when both players have infiltration units, because it's like that first position could be crucial. So if you imagine a search and destroy where my bold head is, that's the center of the board, and then you've got basically that corner and that corner. So nobody wants anything to do with the center, but then maybe I'm down here and I want to basically fortify this objective with an infiltration. You could just go, nope, and place an infiltration unit there. Or you could fortify your own side down here. So infiltration is really important at the first drop because you can either deny somebody trying to infiltrate to fortify their no man's land objective, or you can fortify your own.
Yep.
So you can kind of decide where you're wanting to push to. So if you're wanting to push to the Tau's fortified objective anyway, which is up here, then you don't need to infiltrate there because you're going there anyway. But if you wanted to kind of secure down here and distract, then, you know, that's the choice you make. Yep. If they've got scout moves like piranhas, you can just go, nope, I'm going to stay 9 inches away and stop your scouting. Tau have loads of units that can infiltrate. Start with the obvious one, but it's actually not the most important one. Stealth suits and ghost kills. They all have infiltrate. So they can just go in no man's land, 9 inches away from your deployment, 9 inches away from other models. Cool. That's fairly obvious. They've got stealth in the name, as to be expected. Tetras. What? Okay, so Tetras have infiltration. I suppose because their Pathfinder's inside a little vehicle, but yeah, that makes sense. Now, why is this obnoxious? Tetras have 7 wounds a model, T7, 4 plus save, and it comes in unit 2. So there's 14 wounds at T7 with a 4 up save. Why?
They serve a certain purpose.
Yep, they serve a certain purpose. They give full rerolls on this spot, but more importantly, they can actually go in there and be like, hi, you have to come and overcommit to kill me, and I'm 80 points. How many points are you? Oh, more than 80 points. Cool, thanks for that. Back to that other point of, you know, for number 5, trading resources. Yeah. So Tau will have, in most lists, I'm going to say between, I'd say 3 and 5 infiltration units. Mm-hmm. You know, because they'll be taking 3 units of Tetras anyway, so there's 3. They'll be taking a Ghost Guild, there's 4. And then also Shadow Sun infiltrates as well. So there's 5. So if you take a single Ghost Guild, Shadow Sun, and 3 Tetra units, they've already got 5 infiltration units.
And Shadow Sun joins a unit. Does she convey that to the unit?
No, she can't join units. She's
she can't join units.
She's at least the definition of a lone operative. Yeah, she's like going, no, I'm all right. But I'm just going to hang around you and give you all reroll ones. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and they also have other characters like Firesight Marksman. But nah, I'm not interested in those because they're easy assassination points. Mm-hmm. So board presence and infiltration is something that Tau are going to be really good at. So either you deny them with your own infiltration units of the area that they maybe want to harass you with. You want to set up your own bait. And by doing that, I play many Death Watch players, a local guy called Jim that I play all the time. And he always sets up his infiltrators just basically to bait me and go, you have to come deal with me because I'm getting primary points. I'm also denying you an area of deep strike because of my 12 inches of nope. And also then I'm going to cut the angle so that you have to reveal your crisis suits to come and deal with me. And then I can shoot your crisis suits back. So that's the kind of setup that you want to create. You want to go, my infiltration there is to bait them. I don't want anything else but the crisis suits to shoot them. They'll have to come at me. And you'll do it so that you'll place them in a way that they can't just fire and fade to safety. So then they're having to use a 400 and odd point unit to kill a 100 point unit because that's the only thing that can kill them. Or a Tau player, what you can do, do not fall for this bait. Basically just go, what's your OC on that objective? Oh, 8. Cool. Here's OC 9. Mm-hmm. Don't play that game. So there's a bit of advice for both. Take the bait and shoot and lose your crisis suits, and set out the bait to bait the crisis suits.
So I a question immediately popped into my head with Tau being an definitely a toolbox army with a lot of stuff to bring and put on the table. As you said, it moves quickly, it has board presence, many small units, and so on. Have you already had an opportunity to play a mirror? And how, or what does that look like?
So I've played many mirrors, you know, being part of a Tau Discord and Tau players wanting to play me.
Oh, it happens. Yeah.
It happens. Tau mirror is an interesting one because it's all about who blinks first. And actually, I've done it on two sides of the coin where I've gone first and I've just decided, kind of got in the whole full-on Moncar mindset and just been like, look, I'm coming at you and I'm going to design it so that I can pull off various tricks. But what it comes down to is that Spider-Man meme of a 6-man crisis suit with the Cold Star looking at another 6-man with the Cold Star going. And they basically stay at opposite ends of the board. Mm-hmm. And they basically just move around like that. So it just comes down to, I suppose, trading pieces again, because you're both going to have similar trading pieces. If someone's gone like 3 Ghost Keels and the other person has only got 1, then they should be doing the push. They should be doing the aggression because they've got Ghost Keels, plural, rather than
they
1.
Can afford that, yeah.
Whereas my 1 Ghost Keel, oops, might be revealing what I'm taking, is basically just holding that a flank going, my God, all right.
So don't come near me.
Don't come near me. But the Tau mirror is... I suppose, who's just better at positioning? I find that this is sounds really kind of up my own ass, but like because I've played Tau for a long time, I understand all of the like the fundamentals and stuff like that. So if you've got experience, that's going to definitely help. But if you were talking to Tau players, like neck and neck on player skill, then you will find that going second is kind of huge. And if you're going first, you do need to put the pressure on. You do need to kind of get that early primary lead, because they're going to get the late primary. So it's a tricky one. But I think anybody that doesn't play Tau is rooting for the Tau players to knock each other out, so then they don't have to play Tau, right?
Yeah, there is a lot of truth in that. But on the other hand, you know, Tau have been waiting for their spotlight for a while, so I think they deserve to some time to enjoy it. Enjoy it at least.
Like, maybe two months, and then they get nerfed, and then everyone's like, "Oh no, I got nerfed." And while Eldar are just sneaking around, going, "Shh, I'm still here."
Don't tell anyone. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we'll see. We have 3 months to experiment, play, and enjoy this meta, which I think is still quite good compared to where we were at the very beginning of 10. So, yeah, let's enjoy. Our last point, or your last point.
Yeah.
What is the last strength?
So I suppose it ties in nicely to what I just mentioned there. It's late game dominance. So it's setting the pace of the game and applying pressure. So when you think about all of the things that I've mentioned, these key components, the speed, the, you know, the loan operators, the MSU trading, all leads up to setting out their shop, if they will. Right. Okay. So early doors, I'm going to be using my trading pieces, my MSU, my piranhas to do various things like secure no man's land or area denial or engage no fronts, that kind of stuff. And they're going to use these trading pieces to score the early points. And then from turn three, that's when their big boys will come out to play as in mass. Turn two, you're going to have this insertion force of six-man crisis with cold star shooting, fire and fading, blah, blah, blah. So late game dominance, like I mentioned before, the Kion ability is super strong. Like, we're talking, you know, high level, this is game winning. Just in a single phase, you can break the opponent's back. Sustain hits one slash sustain hits two if they're spotted is insane, especially with the weight of fire that Tau can bring. This gives you two options to deal with this level of kind of pace setting from the Tau. You either go in early and you got to commit on one side and you just push, and for love nor money, even if it doesn't work, you've committed. Do not doubt yourself. Do not think, oh, this is a bad... If you think, oh, God, I've messed up, then fine. But just roll with it. Just go in and don't stop. To shut down their efficiency and squeeze them so hard early doors, prime example is if, let's say, a Tau player is decided to put loads of stuff in reserve, like a three-man crisis and a cold star, farsight and some crisis, and maybe some broadsides in reserve, they don't have a lot of aggression on the board. And let's say if you were a knight player, let's take the obvious option, like Chaos Knights or knights with like 11 Armigers, you know, War Dogs, you name it. And you just go, oh, okay, push, don't shoot, don't charge. Yeah, just you're muted.
Yeah, because I was coughing. Sorry. What I wanted to say, push, but also spread out. Because if those all those units are coming from like board edges and so on, then you want to be, you know, you want to give them choice, but choice that is far away. So the Tau player needs to make, well, for them, unnecessary choices.
Absolutely. So it's like if they put like Brent first and put like 11 mini knights and move in advance. Right. You said to the Tau player, got one turn, son. One turn and then I'm in your face. Mm-hmm. And the Tau player's like, oh my God, what do I have to do? What they'll have to do is two things. One, shoot one flank and accept the other one's going to get through, which means that they'll have to use trading pieces to move block you. Mm-hmm. So they'll have to use a couple of piranhas, maybe some Kroot Hounds, which is their mission play stuff, and you're forcing them out early. So then, like I said about the, you know, the MSU trading resources, you've taken away two of their maybe five or six pieces to do their secondaries, and they've had to do push them out to stop you from getting into their juicy units. So definitely threat overload early. If you can do it, do it. Don't pussyfoot around. Just go in and go, here's my stuff. If you've got two land raiders, put two land raiders out there and go, all right, cool, you might deal with one, but you're not dealing with the second. And then what you do is you position your tanks so that the back of the tank is next to a piece of terrain. So if the said land raider dies, your unit can pop out behind a wall and go, whew, not going to get shot. and then in a position to jump out. Mm-hmm. Advance and charge is massive. If you've got any abilities to advance and charge, all that, that will really mess with the Tau gameplay. Just pre-measure everything. And I think that's what I would definitely say is a key thing to do against Tau, and also as a Tau player, do against your opponent, is take a moment out of your time to pre-measure everything. The threat ranges, the movements. Do they have any ability to move when something gets within a certain range? Do they have abilities to, you know, come in more than less than 9 inches away? All that kind of stuff. You just need to plan it out. Mm-hmm. Because that's the stuff you can only really plan out when you're in game, once you've asked the right questions to your opponent to find out what certain abilities do. Yeah. Or for round one, obviously you look at the pairings and go, cool, and ask every mate that you have, what does this army do? Or you go onto the GW app and search it and know the abilities. But when you're in round two, three, and round five, you don't have the luxury of having that time to research. You have to mm-hmm. ask effective questions. So ask effective questions, establish threat ranges, pre-measure out everything, and maybe use some different colored dice. And just place them out so you know where stuff can go, so then you can visually plan around that. I think these are just general kind of 40K kind of tactics or advice. But honestly, the basics are called basics for a reason, because they work and they give you that foundation. So for me, to stop that Tau late game dominance, you need to press early on or take it to the face and just lose with honor. Because you need to do something.
So I need to ask about one more stereotype, because if you want to apply pressure early or take it to the face, you still need to understand what the other faction can do. And one of the stereotypes around Tau, I guess, is that Tau has a very potent Overwatch. Like in previous editions, you needed to be afraid of that. There were, you know, a bunch of units could shoot Overwatch at you, or they could Overwatch on fives, or some shenanigans about Overwatch that usually could catch the opposing player off guard. Are there any Overwatch shenanigans right now, or is there nothing to worry about apart from volume?
That's it. You've hit the nail on the head. There's no other shenanigans. We can't Overwatch more than once. We don't have any abilities to Overwatch on anything better than a natural six. I think the one thing to look out for, though, is that Overwatch with Tau is just on a new level when it in comparison to everyone else. Mm-hmm. Because even though we don't have abilities like Brokey or Thunderkin that have Overwatch on fives, we have Overwatch on sixes. But if it's turn two with the unit that has example of the Kion, or turn three for the army wide, every six becomes two, because sustain hit still applies to that. So on Overwatch, if I had my six man on a cold star, I'm getting 11 sixes because it's 66 shots. So that becomes 22 hits on Overwatch. Yeah. But then if I've also got reroll ones, I'm going to probably get an additional six, maybe two if I'm lucky. Mm-hmm. So then that becomes, what did I say, 11, 13, 26 or 24. So you're ranging between 22, 24, 26 hits will go through on Overwatch. Strength 8, AP 2, 2 damage. you're just like, okay, I overwatched a Death Watch squadron with a character in, because I just yeeted my six man out in the open and went, come on, Death Watch, I've got rid of your infiltrators now. Come on, come out of the open. He went, oh, fine. And then I went, Overwatch dead. Cool. Next. So he can delete one Overwatch, but you don't.
The guy probably still has nightmares about that.
Yeah.
I know,
yeah.
I would.
Definitely. But there's ways around that, right? There's definitely ways around that. Just bait out. And I think David Gaylord mentioned this in one of his earlier Fireside podcasts about how Overwatch is kind of really bad for the pace of the game, because it's like, I'm moving this unit. Mm-hmm. Do you want to Overwatch? I'm moving this unit. Do you want to Overwatch? Et cetera. But you've got to kind of think like that. You've got to play mind games and be like, okay, cool. So what's the Tau player going to Overwatch? Give him multiple threats. Do you want to Overwatch this? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're like, perfect, brilliant. Now this character can come out, or this other unit can come out of importance. So kind of layering. Put on your best poker face. Put on some shades if you're really bad at poker faces. Just be like, oh, you're on Overwatch. Just get in their head. But Overwatch, be very, 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 very like careful of it. Mm-hmm. Other thing to remember is that Tau don't have any ability to ignore cover when overwatching. So having a couple of guys still in cover or obscured by cover will help you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Charging through walls, probably mm-hmm. like the next thing to plan for. So I guess rapid ingress in the right position could, like, there are things now in 10th edition too, because I hope that, you know, the people who listen to this podcast are not only people like seasoned players who like to hear their name mentioned, but also people who like want to learn something about the game or find out something about the competitive environment. So one of the things of 10th edition is, or typical for 10th edition, is that there are some new concepts that you need to wrap your brain around. One of them is rapid ingress that didn't exist before. And the second mm-hmm. one is that Overwatch can happen both in movement and in the charge phase. So you need to be careful about that. Funny thing that we noticed with Joker when we were playing some time ago is that Overwatch only happens when you actually move. So if you have a unit that is standing somewhere, it's like Overwatch is not going to affect it unless it actually charges. So some interesting things to realize, and I strongly recommend to anyone before going to any event, read the core rules again, just because you might find that you had some, like, don't assume, because, you know, and this is, again, coming back to those demons of previous editions, that you might have some preconceptions and some assumptions about things that no longer are true, and don't just assume. Double check, because it might turn out that your game plan will vary because your assumption was wrong. So yeah, that's a takeaway from me, I guess.
Never assume, because you make an ass out of you and me, as the saying goes. But I'd say one thing, and I seem to can't get away from the conversation of rapid ingress, and because someone always says something on like a podcast or something, I'm like going, god damn it. So I'll reveal it once again. GW have saved you all from a world of pain that I was going to bring at the LGT. And I figured out that, and I was keeping it secret amongst me and my patrons, and we're going to unleash it on LGT, which is before the balanced data slate, I had seen a tech piece with a PureTide Ingram neurochip that allows you to do a stratagem again, but you still have to pay for it. It's not like one of those captain abilities for free. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, Overwatch, no. And I went, I'm going to do a list without crisis suits. And then went like Breach of Fish, and I was like, oh, I wonder if I could. So I could have this Cadrefire Blade. I'm going to design this list without crisis suits. I'm going to remove crisis suits. Let's just go for a bit of fun. And then I went, oh, I could if only I could rapid ingress with two breacher fish. That would be, oh, I can rapid ingress twice. And then I went straight back to crisis suit lists. It actually led me back to the crisis suits. I was like, oh my God, this is game winning. So I had two units of stealth suits, which allowed me to rapid ingress for free when I'm within three. And the whole game plan was going to be, okay, cool. Right, rapid ingress the first unit without the pure side chip, rapid ingress another crisis team. So I was going to have 2 3-man crisis teams with cold stars in, rapid ingress, and most people in the early stages will stage behind the terrain and not want to reveal themselves because they don't want to eat the 6-man to the face. And then all they do is go, oh, thank God, I've avoided 6-man crisis in a cold star. Oh, I've now got 6 crisis suits and 2 cold stars on the other side of the wall that rapid ingress are now going to jump out 18 and nuke me. So it was literally going to be a game-winning moment of rapid ingress twice for free because of the for the stealth suit's ability.
Yeah.
And then if I went second, because it was turn two, I'd have like enough CP. I'd have 4 CP to basically do fire and fade twice. And I was so looking forward to it. And then GW went... you can only use it on battle tactic. I was like, oh, come on. We had the
Please be battle tactic.
Oh my God. We had the one thing that was sensible. Again, like the index was written by a sensible, functioning human being. And then it just had pay for the stratagem. You can do it again. But then we got hold of the Space Marine one and every other ability that gave it for free. But we all had to pay for it. But we ended up losing out because of other people's sins. So. Rapid ingress, just as a long segment there, rapid ingress is definitely something that I like in the new edition because it not only allows you to react to someone's push, but it also allows you to react away from someone's push and push on the other side of the board. So what it does in your head is you always have to plan for rapid ingress, but more importantly, plug something in a gap to stop them from rapid ingressing and pushing your flank. So again, put stuff in strat reserve going against Tau so that they have to use a trading piece to block that area to stop you from getting into position next turn. And if you don't have advance and charge, then rapid ingress, then in your turn, you move and charge. So it helps you get around that.
It changes the dynamic of the game.
Especially
for armies like Death Guard that suffer in the movement phase, rapid ingress is definitely something that they heavily
rely on. And I presume you'd be looking to do that multiple turns because that's the quickest way of you getting your army to do its thing.
So yes, we played two games with Joker, like one last week and one yesterday. And in the first game, you know, when I was building my lists for Death Guard, I always like accounted for rapid ingress, and I was like, oh yeah, this unit of Death Shroud, you know, they're going to rapid ingress, flame something, and then charge into something else. Then the game came, I forgot that rapid ingress existed. So yesterday, I even wrote it down. Piece of paper to have in front of me in the grass.
You could set yourself an alarm as well on your phone.
Exactly, you could feel the difference because I lost the first game like 12-8. Yesterday it was a draw. So next time when we play and I ingress twice,
it's gonna be a 12-8 to you. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. To everyone out there listening, make sure that you read the rules. Make sure that you check. I catch myself, and I'm not an amazing player. That's why I'm highlighting this. I catch myself forgetting that there are certain new mechanics in the game that actually can make a difference. Like what Kyle mentioned about this, the characters issuing a challenge to one another. There is a stratagem for that. I haven't used it before, but there is potential in that. And I bet there are people out there who haven't even considered it just because they simply forgot that it existed. So go back to that core rule set or core rule book, read the stratagems that are in there, check the wording of those stratagems post data slate, because the wordings are now a little bit different. There are many more possibilities than there used to be. Go through that again, make sure that you understand, write it down, write down Overwatch, write down ingress so that you don't forget. And you will see your scores and your end game results.
One thing you mentioned there is really, really good. I'm always a fan of pen and paper, okay? And checklists, I know sometimes you hate them at work and various things like checklists. There's a checklist for a checklist for the checklist's sake. But creatures of habit, behavior patterns with 40K exist all the time. You know, we get to the table, we have a chess plot, we talk about our armies. It's all repetition. So the power in repetition is that you start to get used to things and it starts to become muscle memory. But that also has a downside, like you were saying. Addition changes, you need to go back to basics and learn it again. You can do it. It'll be a lot faster learning curve because you've done it once, done it twice, done it three times. But having something like a visual aid next to you is really good. I have sometimes a sheet that'll have like Overwatch, Rapid Ingress, so I'll know when I've done it and I'll tick it off, or I'll have key things to kind of like, I'll have sections where I'll be like, key things to note about my enemy's army to watch out for. Like, do they have advance and charge? In the past, it was, can you heroic intervene more than 3 inches? Now that's not a thing. It's just heroic intervention. So, like, I've had to relearn some of the basics to get myself out of the habit of going, you know, I'll still sometimes do it, but can you? Oh, never mind. It's an invalid question anymore. It's the ninth edition. But having visual aids, there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, actually, it's probably better for you and your opponent, because it sets the tone of how you like to play, and it's very organized and there's no sloppiness about it. And time management as well, it'll help you with your time management, because as much as an event is quite daunting, you do have to play to a strict time limit. And obviously if you look at the UKTC pack, it recommends, you know, 1 hour 25 on the clock each, 10 minutes of pre-conversation. And time does fly by when you're having fun. You are there to have fun, but you're also there to be efficient. So anything that you can do to be fair to not only yourself, but your opponent, that is crucial. Because if you set that tone, they're going to want to set that tone back as well. And you're going to have a really enjoyable experience. That's a myth buster for you. We're not all sweaty, angry, neck beards, you know, or just want to win at all costs. You'll have a fantastic time. I certainly, for one, I'm really looking forward to LGT. It's always been a highlight of the year, walking into that hall and seeing it and catching up with everybody and then getting down to the nitty-gritty and playing some games. But organization is key. I like the fact that you write it down, because I do a very similar thing, and it just helps you when you're in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, especially, I mean, it's funny, but like when I was a kid, when I attended school or secondary school, high school, even uni at times, there were always people who wanted to cheat on tests and examinations.
Yeah.
And you know how you prepare this little like visual cue, as you said, or cheat sheet or whatever you call it, like this little piece of paper where you have your handwriting but very tiny so that you could whip it out at the right moment and answer the question. So I used to make those as well, but I actually never cheated at an examination or on a test. Like I couldn't. Like I tried once, I put a book between my legs and it dropped on the floor with a bang, and the teacher knew immediately that I was cheating, so I never did it again. But I prepared those cheat sheets, and then I actually learn when I write. Like I memorize when I write stuff. So if you're that kind of a person, or I don't know, kinetic learner or something like that, and
yeah,
I remember, like when I listen to podcasts when I walk my dogs, I catch myself on the next day, like listening to something, listening maybe to the same podcast even for like extra knowledge. And I remember the place when I was walking when I heard that bit of the podcast. And I have the same with writing down things. I write things down and then they easily pop up in my head during the game. And I don't even have to look at the piece of paper anymore. So do give that some consideration as well. Maybe it is worthwhile not to, you know, do a Xerox or a copy or a photo of like an index book and carry it on your phone. Make your notes yourself and you'll find that the knowledge just stays in your brain. So, you know, depends on the personality, but you might just be that type.
And I think the, right. Just to add one last final point to that. I actually do all my scoring sheets on pen and paper because it helps you visually see how the game state is. Two, it saves your battery life to get in touch with the important misses or the girlfriend or the friends when your battery's dying because you're using it all day for photos and Battlescribe and all the apps and stuff. So yeah, pen and paper is really good. Do your visual score. You can see how the visual game's unfolding, and obviously you can make adjustments to your battle plan. But no, that's overall, I think, hopefully you've enjoyed the 7 strengths of Tau and how to, you know, beat it or look out for various tricks that the Tau will try to do. But yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, I don't think it would be possible to do a better advertisement of your services than what we have just done. So to put the cherry on top, where can people find you?
So nice and simple. I'm on Discord mainly. That's the bread and butter of my community at the moment. I am starting to reach out more and do more content on YouTube, but it's a slow burner at the moment because I'm still a one-man band. But at the moment, there'll be a link that's provided to access a website called WAP. And within that, you've got both the option to select join the free community, or you've got options to support me on my Patreon side, which is a bit more in-depth coaching and specific kind of like lessons, weekly lessons. I do all mine live and I do them recorded as well so that people around the globe can actually like watch them at their own leisure or where their life gets in the way. So you can find me on that. Otherwise, I do have the socials like Instagram and YouTube, but everything is within the Discord. So I'll just be providing the WAP shop link that you can click on, join the free community. And then also, if you want to support me and join my Patreon, it'd be more than appreciated. And obviously, you get a lot of bang for your buck in comparison to some of the competitors. So for me, I'm just happy that my PureTech program is growing. And it seems to be having a really good kind of impact on the community. So if I can grow that anymore, I need your support and it'd be much appreciated.
Yeah, I mean, to everyone listening out there, you can see and empirically experience that we're dealing with a treasure chest of knowledge. So if you want more of that, follow the links in the description that I'm going to provide when this goes out. And yeah, help out Kyle in doing what he's doing, because that allows him to to go to tournaments. This allows him to cooperate with Team South Africa, and I guess they will be happy about that as well.
Yeah.
And another link that I'm going to put in the description is our Patreon, because I strongly recommend that you support us as well, because we are developing, developing the podcast, and we want to buy our own equipment to be able to go to Polish events and stream them, and then also to come to events abroad and not actually rely on someone else's equipment but our own. So if you want to help us with that, we would much appreciate it as well. And as I mentioned before, subscribe, like, and press the notification button, especially for the time when we are at the LGT, and you'll get a notification every single time when we go live. I think. Oh, one more thing. We have the raffle that we promised you for helping us reach the 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, which we have successfully done. And the raffle will happen probably on the very next episode where Joker and myself are there together. Tomorrow, so today is this is releasing on Friday. Tomorrow, so on Saturday, we speak to Manny Chima and Ed Watts from Glasshammer Gaming. I am not sure if Joker is going to make it just because he has a small child right now that he needs to attend to. It's highly likely I'm going to be doing it myself. Probably on Sunday, we speak to... can't remember to whom, because we have too many of those. But Joker might be there, so we will do the raffle there. So just a little bit more patience, please, and soon you'll see who the winner is. Kyle, with that, I thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you. You are a blast to talk to, and yeah, thank you for providing some of the coaching for free to our listeners as well. I really appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure, mate, and I can't wait to have a beer with you and see you at LGT.
Absolutely.
I tell you what, if we end up playing, right, beer straight on me, I'll get us a beer and we can chill. We can have a great
We know exactly how it's going to go.
Pew, pew, pew. Yeah, so no, it's been a pleasure and thank you for having me on. It's much appreciated and thanks for taking the time out to have me on.
And to everyone listening, thank you. Stick with us and until next time. Bye-bye.
See you later, guys.